Welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast with me, Ian Welsh. I'm with Georgina Erringay, a senior consultant with Sancroft, and we're at Innovation Forum's How Business Can Tackle Modern Slavery and Labour conference at Freshfields offices in London. Welcome, Georgina.
Good afternoon, Ian.
For UK companies, clearly the Modern Slavery Act has been a real wake-up. And in a panel session earlier on, you said that companies are struggling a bit to find where within their organisation the ownership of dealing with the MSA should be. How do you characterise this challenge?
It's something that we at Sancroft deal with clients almost on a daily basis around the reaction and response to the Modern Slavery Act. It's really characterised by the fact that the issues that the Modern Slavery Act is seeking to address is not only thematically in the area of modern slavery, which is of course an all-encompassing term for human trafficking, forced labour and bonded labour and such, but it's also a piece of legislation around disclosure. And so when you've got a complex, kind of messy thematic area of corporate responsibility, as well as the need to be more transparent or this call to be more transparent from the UK government, it leads to quite an uncomfortable positioning of this. So we see that often this challenge is characterised in a quite binary way. People talk about the legal colleagues versus the CR colleagues or the communications colleagues or whomever. But it's actually the fact that this takes a whole company to really consider and assess and address issues throughout its business model and integrate that into business strategy. So it can't be something that's siloed into one department. It's got to be a whole company approach. And I think that's where one of the strengths of the Act is that it's talking about your direct operations and your supply chain. So we often see Section 54, the TISC clause, whatever we want to call it, as being about supply chains, but actually it's about the way your business functions.
Do you think that this was the intention of the Act originally, or is this one of these happy unintended consequences?
I think it's a bit of both. I think depending on who you ask in government, they'd all now claim, absolutely yes, this was its full intention. But I think there is obviously some truth in that. By giving a blank sheet of paper, essentially, for this disclosure, it enables the environment of innovation and an opportunity to create innovative solutions. But it also then comes with its challenges of things potentially not going as far as they could.
Okay, let's come back to the innovation side in a sec. But I mean, how do you think that companies can begin to see labour as a supply chain issue? And you know, what are the steps in that process?
It's a mindset change initially. There's many practical steps that should be taken from that mindset. It's companies historically, if we look back 10 years ago, we were seeing a real increase in product certification. We're looking at product transparency, looking at smallholder farmers, and really trying to understand where the product was coming from. The consumer was wanting to understand global supply chains and the fact that we have our bananas in Tesco or wherever we do our grocery shopping, but where have they come from? And I think we're now in a similar epiphany, which is, where have the people come from that made it possible for me to have this product or service? And I think as long as we're able to have that initial mindset check and recalibration of the fact we're looking not only at where our products have come from, but how they got there. I think that's the critical change that needs to happen or kind of be catalyzed within organizations in order that they can appropriately understand and then address some of the challenges presented in the labour supply chain.
Okay. Well, as companies begin to develop better practices around engaging on the Modern Slavery Act, how can this become a competitive advantage for them, do you think?
Some of the kind of headline pieces around this is, if you have engaged with the Modern Slavery Act in a credible, robust and meaningful way that addresses process more so than reporting, then what you've done is you've created business security. You understand your risks. You'll be able to foresee potential challenges and mitigate those. You'll have better trusting relationships within your business operations, and that you shouldn't underestimate the trust that comes from the consumer as well, and how exposés can really knock and harm that consumer trust. And so I think the competitive advantage comes from being a good business. And I say that with my kind of eyes squinted a little bit, because you don't want it to be an argument just about morals, because although that is a foundation block of why businesses should and will engage with this agenda, it just makes business sense. It doesn't make sense to make money off exploitation. And as we move through millennia, it becomes even more apparent that that's not a sustainable way of operating.
Sure. And I guess no company is going to say they want to make money off exploitation, but I guess it's the ignoring it, the willful ignorance, or willfully ignoring it, that is the big problem. Looking forward then, how do you think that the legislative landscape is going to evolve?
Well, we're seeing some really interesting rumblings all around the world. So we've got in Australia the consultation for a similar piece of legislation. We see really kind of strong movements and directionally towards due vigilance in France, child labour issues with Dutch law. We're also hearing conversations in Canada. I mean, a notable absence there at the moment within Asia, but there is a broadly a global movement towards legislation around this theme. But notably, this legislation is coming out about corporate reporting. When looking ahead at the landscape that's to come, it's at two levels, really. The first being that we will see an increase in reporting legislation at a national scale. So it's important that businesses understand this is coming and engage in appropriate fashion in helping to craft what that'll look like. So we want to avoid a situation where we have hundreds of different reporting requirements placed upon business when we could really harmonise that. But also the second layer of that change in the legislative landscape is at the international scale. So we already have internationally recognised frameworks within soft law and international law around the UN Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights, which help to provide some framing for this. The ILO conventions, there are many other international frameworks and tools that support businesses to engage with this. So I think although it's very easy for someone to sit and say the law is hardening, there is evidence of this, the UK Act and list all the others, is also about recognising as the law is hardening, more tools are being provided. It's a step change in capitalism more than it is about increased disclosure.
It is, and I guess the increasing disclosure and reporting, you say, that is the tool to then enable change within companies. You know, we talk about it, therefore you have to demonstrate your year-on-year improvements.
Yes.
Georgina, fantastic insights. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Ian.